the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And I'm Charlie McCarron.
And today we are finishing up with our third game in the trading card game series, and this is going to be Star Wars Unlimited. We talked a little bit about Star Wars, was it Destinies that you worked on?
Yep.
Yep, and so this is Star Wars Unlimited. It's the newest trading card game from Fantasy Flight, Asmodee?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I think this game is really interesting, has a lot of interesting things going on. I'm terrible at it still. But I'm going to go over kind of how it works with you all and just to make sure we understand what's going on and how it's kind of similar to the one we've already played. So, obviously it has its own setup. The main differences between like this and Magic are that you're going to be drawing two cards every turn instead of one. I think also Pokemon had a one card draw. And then with those two cards, you're going to choose a card from your hand technically, but often it's going to be one from the new cards you got. And that will be a resource that acts kind of like a colorless mana, colorless element that you can use to play cards in the future. So you kind of build up this resource pool, and over time that gets stronger and stronger, so you can do more cards, stronger cards, add it to either your ground units, space units, or play events and kind of tricks and surprises, things like that. You also have upgrades, very much like Magic the Gathering, where you have a lot of things you can do with manipulating the different units you have. But the big thing here is that the space and ground units are in their own zones. Both can attack your enemy's base, which is kind of, you know, your core hit points for your base. And then you also have a leader who is leading your whole group. Once you get up to a number of resources in your pool, you'll be able to flip your leader over into a unit, and they will join the battlefield in some way or another. I think this is a really neat thing. This also has a little bit different vibe where you are going back and forth during the action phase. So you're not doing a full turn and then someone else does a full turn. You both do like draw resource allocation together at the same time, and then you go back and forth with the action phase. Actions can be things like playing cards from your hand, attacking with one of your units that was played previous turns, using an action ability in a card in play. So a lot of the different cards have different actions that they can do. And then you can also do an interesting thing, which is take the initiative, which gives you first player advantage for the next round. I think that's a really cool kind of push and pull. Like, do you keep going hard or do you try to like back off a little bit so you can get first player the next round? There's a little bit of finessing going on here, which I think is really neat.
Yeah, that first player advantage came down to the wire in the game. I haven't played a game where the initiative is that important.
And I think, for me...
That depends how you're defining initiative, Charlie, because you've played plenty of splatter games
in this series. Well, okay. To me, life or death based on if you go first or not.
Like complete win or loss over one turn first.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean, I still think that's true of several splatter games.
Okay, well...
but just like a lot of our other trading card games, you know, we have keywords going on that mean different things. And then this initiative counter that passes back and forth. For me, what I thought was really interesting here is our base and our leader kind of determine the tone of what our deck is built around. And so like the base will be a single element and then leader will be two elements. And those three elements will give you a discount basically to spend on cards when you play them. I say a discount. The game says if you don't have the symbols that a card has, it costs two more per card or per symbol to play if you don't have them. So a lot of cards can have two symbols on them. So if you don't have either of those symbols, then it's going to be four more resources to play that card, which when you're looking at between 1 to 8 resources per play, 4 is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's interesting because the deck building restriction...
Mm-hmm.
kind of bridges the gap between the game and the metagame in that in the metagame, when you're building the deck, you have these symbols, and it's kind of a similar situation to, say, something like Mage Wars, where there are certain elements that are going to cost more and less depending on your mage. But in this game, the cost doesn't come in the metagame when you're building the deck. It comes in the actual game, where you have to play in-game resources for your metagame decisions.
Right. So Darth Vader could hire Han Solo, but it's probably going to be really expensive to do so.
Right. Expensive in the game
itself. In the game.
Yeah.
Not in terms of your deck construction. You're not looking at, you know, sophisticated rules about, you know, this card is going to be 4 points. You can only have 60 points in your deck. Like, you need to have at least 50 cards. None of them are, like, lands or energies. So they're all, they all have rules and things going on. You just choose which ones you don't use, and those goes face down as your resource.
I kind of like it, because one thing I also noticed in the games that we played is there are rounds, somewhat frequently, where you do have a lot of resources left over that you just have no use for.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling risky, you could just, you know, splash in some other factions into your deck.
Oh, yeah.
And because of the way the resource system works, if you end up in a turn where you don't have enough to use them, you can just put them down as a resource. And it doesn't matter that they're off faction.
Right.
I think the system actually makes it quite possible to, you know, make very flexible decks depending on how much risk you're willing to assume in cost you have to pay.
Well, and then you can also focus a lot more on the keyboards, like you were saying before.
Yes.
Previous series, like, or the previous episode. Because, like, then you're like, oh, man, now I have these four or five different types, but if I don't get these together, then it's not going to be worth as much. Okay, now it's just a resource, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I need more resources.
Yeah, you could just mostly keyword draft.
Yeah.
And just ignore the symbols altogether.
Oh, man. Okay, so this one also has six different symbols instead of five. So there's a little bit more going on. Not more going on, but more symbols than Magic has.
Yeah, but you're going to have three of those in any given deck.
Right, though. And there all are specific multiplayer rules for more than two player, which I still really want to try at some point. But that twists everything a little bit, and I think makes it really interesting to try and build decks for. But for the podcast, obviously, keeping it simple is good. Is key.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I was just going to say one thing I did like, you mentioned the leaders being part of your deck that are out right away, which, you know, that was something that's now seems to be a common thread among TCGs.
Yeah, like we were saying with Commander and
Commander
Magic.
Format Except and Commander. Magic.
Yeah.
Star Wars Destiny did that too, where you put out your characters and you actually only, in Star Wars Destiny, you only have characters that are out at the beginning of the game, they're fighting the other characters, and everything in your deck is more like effects and that one uses dice as well.
Yeah.
So
is it sort of like Pokemon where you're just trying to eliminate the
eliminate the characters.
Oh, interesting.
It's like Pokemon, but you start with three out, and that's all you ever get.
Yeah, you can do like epic. I forget what they're called. There's two sides to the
character.
They
evolve.
Leia the princess becomes Leia the general.
Now there's like a more powerful version that you can do, but it costs more in your deck construction costs.
Sure.
Now Farm Boy Luke becomes Luke the Jedi. Oh, man, they're all there.
This game, it reminds me a lot of Duelist 2, Star Wars Unlimited, I mean.
Yeah.
Like, Duelist 2 also has draw 2, so every turn you draw 2 more cards. And I guess the biggest similarity I see is that it has this combat system where one unit attacks one other unit and they simultaneously deal their damage to each other, and the damage is persistent. And I would imagine this is because both of the games probably draw some inspiration from Hearthstone, which I believe has the same system. And I think this is actually one of the best ways to do combat, because damage trading in this... Well, when I say damage trading, I mean like you attack each other, you deal damage to each other simultaneously. Yeah. It's a really interesting puzzle, actually. There's a lot going on in that very simple mechanic, because you're trying to trade as efficiently as possible. Right. And because different units have different attacks and defense, that may mean different things. Like, if I have a unit that is 1-1, meaning one attack and one defense, and you have a unit that's 5-1, I would really like to trade my 1-1 with your 5-1.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas you probably want to trade your 5-1 with like...
A 3-5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're always looking for the most efficient trades.
The best deal.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking for the best deal. And it's a very interesting puzzle that I think works very well in the games that I've seen it in, including this game. And when I compare this to the Magic combat system, which also has simultaneous damage, in Magic it is very difficult to figure out how much damage a given trade is going to have, because you have your guys attack and then your opponent decides who they defend with. There are just way too many permutations of how that could go. Having it be one unit versus one unit is the scale where you can make interesting calculations about what trades to make.
And it's the attacker's choice, not the defender's choice.
Right.
Which I think, is doing exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was playing Magic again with the game mechanics in mind. It's like the defenders really have an advantage in a way in Magic.
Yeah.
Because, for one, you can block. I kept getting thrown off in this game because you can't block people attacking your base just by having a character there.
They
unless
have
you have a sentinel keyword. But yeah, it's just interesting. And I don't know if one way or the other feels better to me, but I think this one definitely feels like attacking is more fun because you get to choose where it's the damage is going.
I feel like I'm making more intelligent choices about my attacks, or at least I feel like the choices that I'm making are like I can understand the implications of those choices.
Yeah.
Whereas in Magic, I when I attack, I always feel like, oh, wait, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if there's something I haven't considered. You know,
it's an instant that I couldn't have known about.
Oh, well, yes. There's also the interrupt.
Yeah.
But this system just seems cleaner and, as a player, more approachable.
Oh, sure.
Than the Magic system.
Yeah, Magic, you get into these kind of standoffs where I don't want to attack. Oh, well, I don't want to attack. And it can be interesting in another way where it's like we keep building up and building up and eventually...
An arms race.
You get like some crazy cool card that changes everything, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
A board wipe.
Yeah. What was the card you opened in a pack that
That's
was
a
just...
hyperspace mishap or something like that.
Yeah.
This is the Holdo maneuver, basically.
Yeah, it clears all space units from the game.
Just kills like, them.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone's gone. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, characters and ships are a little more transient in this one. They will get killed a decent amount, but...
Yep. But honestly, having the resources be built into every card, I think is a huge benefit for the system. Just because, like, you're not trying to balance, like, oh, I need to make sure I have 17 to 19 lands because if I don't have the right type of... Like, there's none of that analysis, which... You know, the first Magic game I played during our draft, he just drew, what did he draw? He didn't draw any lands. He just kept drawing events and creatures, and he couldn't play anything, and I just beat him. And I'm like, well, that doesn't seem very exciting and fun.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the way to go. I mean, Pokemon 2, right? If you don't draw the energy, you can't do anything. So when you're building the deck, you have to do this math problem that isn't really...
And then it's not accurate because, you know, they could all just be together on the bottom and you just never actually get to them.
But also, my assumption is that the way that people have figured out the optimal number of lands to put in a deck or the optimal amount of energy is, I assume, some form of statistics.
And trial and error.
Yeah. And that is not a great way to do that because then, you know, new players have to go and ask, okay, how many things should I put in this deck?
Yep.
Well, the number that they give you might not actually be the number depending on what cards you have.
Right. And the deck total size can change too.
Yeah. And this does make it feel like, oh, I can put whatever I want in the deck. I mean, some decks might be better than others, but I'm not going to ruin my chances just because I didn't understand the optimal ratios of resources.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you have those kind of thresholds that people have to understand first, you know, those, it's really tough to get into a game if you're constantly trying to get over these barriers. And yeah. So I think Star Wars Unlimited did a great job making it more approachable, especially to people that may not be TCG fans already, but are Star Wars fans. And so they really want to just get into the game because of Star Wars. Great way to open the door for that.
Yeah. I mean, this is another way where the resource curve, the mana curve, works more like Hearthstone or like Duelist 2.
It's more linear.
Well, in the sense that you're just guaranteed a new resource every turn. Although in this game, you can forgo that extra resource to instead have another card.
Yeah, which I love.
Yeah.
I love that. And the fact that you get to choose a card from your hand every time. So if you draw two great cards, like, oh, I want both of these for the next turn. I'm going to get rid of this Yoda that's been in my hand that I already have a Yoda out, so I can't even play this one right now. Like, that's great.
Yeah, it does really do a good job of mitigating bad draws.
And
yeah. Oh no, it's just reminding me of, like, other games like Race for the Galaxy 2, where you pay with cards from your hand to place things. And or even just like mulliganing. It is a tough decision, like, which cards to give up. Like, players, I don't know, I'm curious what you guys think about that, because I think it's interesting to figure out, like, oh, I don't need this card right now, so I'm going to give it up. Like, that's can be a fun decision, but it can also be like a loss of, what's a loss aversion, like, players.
You get a 7-cost card in your hand at the first turn, and are you talking about converting it to a resource? Or
Yeah.
Of course you're going to convert it to a resource. Yeah.
Like, but it's hard because it's like, oh man, that's such a cool card. It would be great to have that when I need it.
Yeah.
But you're not going to need it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... I mean, I enjoy that choice. I think there are probably ways to make it obvious what cards you want.
Yeah.
Like, to make cards more situational rather than more general. Because, you know, if you have two general cards, then how do you pick between them? But if... Like, if this one's only good if, like, you know, if I have Darth, well, no, in this case, Darth Vader's lightsaber, I always have Darth Vader available. But, like, if I have Leia's lightsaber and I don't have Leia, then, I'll just put it as a resource.
Oh, sure.
You can still use it, of course, the way that it's set up. It does more stuff if Leia's in play.
Yeah. Speaking of, we were talking about Luke's lightsaber in another episode for Star Wars Destinies, and this one does... that a little bit.
Okay, that was the original Star Wars customizable card game from Decipher.
Oh, wow.
I think called Star Wars CCG. But yeah, the example I used was, well, you can't play Luke's lightsaber unless you have Luke out on the field. It was very thematic and restrictive in that way. Just like in Pokemon, you can't... evolve, you need like the basic version to use the evolution version. And yeah, so the example came up like as we were playing, oh, I got Luke's lightsaber and I could apply it to anyone,
and it ended up on some troopers.
Because if you just get a bonus if it's on Luke.
And I noticed something really interesting about the design of the upgrades. I looked through a couple different ones to make sure. I'm assuming this is true for all upgrades in the game, although I don't know if that's how they are designed, but I'm assuming it's how they're designed. So upgrade cards are ones that you attach to other cards. Mm-hmm. And they have little icons on the bottom that show how they modify the card. So like a plus some number for attack plus some number for defense, and then some keywords on the middle bar. So that you can just slide them under and see the upgrade. And what I realized is that they're designed... so that any special text effects on the card are effects that are only resolved when it first comes into play. None of the upgrades have any passive ongoing effects while they're
like
in
special things beyond the number increases.
Yeah, the Darth Vader lightsaber, the Luke lightsaber, they're like, okay, if you attach this to Darth Vader, then you get to do 4 damage immediately. But that's just a one-time thing.
And I will say that like things like shields do have a special thing, but that's a pretty easy thing to know. And like, oh, I have to kick the shield first, before it goes away.
Yes, okay, that's a good point.
But those are also not cards you have in your deck; those are more like tokens.
Right. And this, the thing I really like about this is that then once you've attached them, you don't have to think about them.
Yeah.
And you can just slide them under, and it's very simple, right? You have a complex one-time effect when played, and then you have just their passive bonuses, which are represented by numbers.
Sure.
Which can just peek out from underneath the other card. I think that's a great way to design cards that are attached to other cards.
Yeah. Yeah, having that big one-off reveal, especially if it's a unique thing for a unique unit, you don't want to be looking at that the whole time. You just want the benefit that you're receiving.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a great point.
Yeah. That is a very good way to design attachment cards. And I think that's not the case in a lot of other games.
Yeah. A lot of the, especially like in Magic, you have, this token now represents not only a stat boost, but also has this unique ability when it's on this card. It's like, oh God, okay, I have to remember that this token, now the card's gone and discarded, but the token remains. So you're trying to like keep this in your head, what's going on. That can be cumbersome for a lot of people, unless you're really familiar and really passionate about playing it.
Yeah, or like enchantments in Mage Wars, sure. I know, can do all sorts of crazy things, and they just stay on the unit.
That's true, yeah.
So it's So that's a good way to design upgrades. Another interesting thing about the game, there's two lanes. You have the space units and the ground units. Mm-hmm. And so ground units can attack other ground units or the base. Space units can attack other space units or the base. And I felt that this creates a feeling of higher dimensionality, mm-hmm. or I guess spatial considerations in the game. Like in Magic the Gathering, for example, space is kind of just like this one abstract blob. If you're thinking in Mage Wars terms, it's like everything's in the same zone.
Right, right.
And in this game, I guess there's sort of two zones, and they don't interact. Well, I guess they can interact sort of with each other, but mostly they don't. They both interact with the base. And maybe that's like the minimum amount that you need to create a sense of dimensionality.
And I could see there being, ground to air missiles and things, or lasers, where this ground unit can only attack air units or space units, things like that. I could see being a unique thing in the game. It's like, oh, that's really cool. But then you'd want to have the ground units attack it because it can't attack back because it can only attack space units.
Right.
So it's like, oh, it's really weak. So I need to have sentinels guarding it. So you feel like you can have a strategy building around those unique things. I don't know if that's actually a thing.
I got it. Well, yeah, cool. I'm now very curious what the Death Star card is in this game. Oh. If there is.
Well, technically,
it's probably a base, but
yeah, there's the command center is technically on the Death Star.
So it'd be weird to have, the Death Star
as a whole unit.
Yeah, in the old CCG, they had Death Star was. There was planets that you went to, and Death Star was one planet that obviously blew up
other planets
and things. But you had to have a very specific sequence of cards to make it happen.
Oh, sure. But assemble the Death Star and then move the Death Star. And,
yeah.
Cool.
The biggest card I saw that my coworker Kevin was making a deck around this, 12. It was a card that had like 12... attack and defense, I think. It's the biggest Star Destroyer out there. But he tried to build a deck around like playing that for free somehow.
Oh man.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't talk about a lot. So for your leader, they have the unit side and they have the just leader side. So a leader unit or a leader are the two sides they have. When they're just your leader, they have a unique action that they can do as long as the conditions are met to do that action. And I think that's a really cool thing to have. That's just, they're constantly involved in every round, everything's going on. You're always considering what your leader can do, which I think is a really cool way to kind of highlight them. And then once you get to a certain number of resources, you can actually reveal them as a unit without paying a cost for them. So they're actually taking to the field. You don't feel like it was like, oh man, I had to pay, 8 resources for Darth Vader. I really hope he's worth it. No,
yeah.
You just have 7 resources. He comes out if
you want to. It's a threshold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, threshold costs are, I think we've talked about that before. I really like threshold costs for things.
Yeah. Well, and this game mixes thresholds with
actual
thresholds.
Yeah. Yeah, which feels really good. I really like having that, especially for your leader.
Yeah.
I would love to have the bases have some kind of uniqueness to them other than just the symbol. I would just love to see what that could look like, but I don't know if mechanically they'd want to change anything there.
Yeah. And they... Do they? And this, we were using mostly the starter set, so I maybe...
I got a few boosters of the new set, and I didn't see any locations that had unique powers or anything on them.
Okay.
See, it seems like that's easy enough to add, though.
On the other side, though, they had tokens like spies and things like that, so I think that kind of makes a sense for what they're doing there. But
yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys have for takeaways?
So I think actually my takeaway is pretty specific to something I'm working on. I've mentioned my game Junkernauts before in this series, where you have a bunch of robots battling each other. And I have the structure of Junkernauts is pretty similar to this, actually, because it also has you going back and forth taking actions. And so I also have an initiative marker. And one thing that's been a little bit awkward in the game is that right now the initiative just passes back and forth. And I've tried a couple different ways of doing this. But if you have the initiative marker, if you start the game with the initiative marker, that is not great. And that is, I think, generally true. That's true in this game as well. If you have the initiative marker on the first turn, it is not very useful. Mm. If you would have it on any other turn, it is quite useful.
Yeah.
And the problem is, in Junkernauts, if you start with the initiative marker, you go first. That's not great. Your opponent sees what you're doing and can respond.
And then they go first.
And then next turn, they go first, which is better because they already have things on the board that they can take advantage of. It's a double whammy.
Yeah.
But the reason that it works all right in this game is that if you start with the initiative marker, it is easier for you to claim the initiative marker for the second turn, which makes up for the fact that, you know, you didn't get much use out of it the first turn. And I'm thinking maybe I could try experimenting with that in Junkernauts. So I might try a system where you can claim the initiative marker in Junkernauts.
Oh, sure.
And that's my takeaway, which in this case is very specific to that
game. Yeah, for your game to, you know, each robot exhausts itself. They can't do another thing that round. And so having it be where, like, okay, I'm not going to exhaust this guy. I'm not going to use this guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that first player token instead.
Right.
So that the next round I'll be able to go first.
Yeah.
And that feels a little bit more strategic. Which is great.
Yeah, it's an interesting tension because, a lot of times it's not worth attacking with R2-D2 to do one damage, maybe. But I liked it, that aspect of it.
Yeah. I was realizing more and more that the initiative counter is a very good thing to have control over when you can get it. I most of the time did not have the initiative counter. And I think that led me to reacting a lot more than acting. And I think it's really cool to, like, have these secondary mechanics that you can interact with that don't involve resources or cards for games like this. Something that you toggle on and off, something that you... This might even be my takeaway, which is building off of Ananda's a little bit. But being able to interact with the game in a way that, you know, if you have a bad hand, you're not in trouble. You can actually still do something, and maybe it's, certain units have things like, use your action. And, a lot of cards have action things. What am I trying to say? Like, there's secondary mechanics that you can interact with that are not part of the core of the game. I think that's really interesting. It can add to the complexity a little bit, but I think could add a little bit more to the strategy, too.
Hmm.
So it's a little more general of what Ananda said.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, just thinking back to the initiative thing, too, it's interesting in terms of, like, how it's a catch-up mechanic, too, because the more units someone has, they're probably going to take more actions, and then the person who doesn't have as many...
Thank you for remembering my thought I had thought that while Ananda was talking, and then lost it.
I was trying to get that out too.
Yeah.
But I forgot about it until now.
Yeah, that's great. But yeah, it's a great catch-up mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah, and takeaway for me, I think it would just be the resources, how that works. That's an improvement, I think, from the old way of having to include lands or energy in your deck. It's just, why not make every card fun to put in your deck?
right. Not feel like you're forced to put half of your deck into this type.
Yeah.
You know, when you're drafting, 14 cards that are all supposed to be added to a deck, it's like, oh, but technically I don't get to add all these because I don't have enough, or it's going to dilute my deck so much that I just shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a tough thing.
And you want people thinking about what cards are cool that work together, not, okay, what cards do I need to make it possible to use these at all?
Right.
Cool. Well, that's Star Wars Unlimited. Tune in next time for our bonus wrap-up episode on trading card games.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.